Welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, the host. True Wealth, as always, is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coin Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. We've been in business about 20 years. We offer the area's nicest, finest facility, probably one of the finer facilities in the U.S., built from the ground up with security in mind. We also offer one of the highest-rated privately held depository services in the Western U.S., very fair priced, you know, 60 to 100 bucks a year is the average box. Sometimes you can get a better deal than that. I mean, sometimes you can get a better deal than that from the bank, which is fine. It's a completely different concept. We offer complete anonymity, a different level of security, confidentiality. You know, it's a different level of privacy. It's completely secure. No one knows you have it unless you tell them you have it. And it isn't reported to the IRS like all the other stuff. And, you know, there have been many people over the years that I've done this that have been through a variety of difficult circumstances. None of them are planned, of course. And having the secure anonymity of hard liquid assets really has carried some people through. I've seen some people go through. I mean, we've done a lot of transactions. I mean, we've done literally hundreds of thousands of individual transactions. So we've got to deal with a lot of customers and talk to a lot of people and things like that. And I've seen people go through severe false attacks from the government, DEA. I saw a situation where a gal's husband or who she just married had some literally little tiny starter pot plants in the basement of her house, and she traveled a lot with her job, and you know, and her new husband had met a guy and had him over, and the guy found out and turned him in, and she had no clue, and the DEA was trying to seize her property, which was a significant property. She took multiple polygraphs, of course, and passed. They said non-conclusive, which means they passed, and that kind of stuff. And not that, you know, I'm taking one side or the other on that stuff, but I've seen it. I've seen guys go through corporate bankruptcies. I've seen people have major liability suits against them for simple things, you know, the old lady that slips on the ice kind of thing and tries to take the whole property. And in a lot of these cases, that the security of having the metals gives them the ability to fund things when people are trying to seize assets, when people are trying to freeze accounts. And I know that sounds really extreme, folks, but we do live in a time, I think you'd agree, where nothing is sacred. We live in a time of kind of utter insanity. I mean, you know, I guess I'm kind of immersed in it a little because I stay sharp on it. I research what's going on in the world, and it's crazy. And I think God created a system that works if we just stick with it. And when you get to precious metals and all this kind of stuff, you know, it's a timeless form of wealth. And I think the real problem is that people, we get too caught up in everything having to be a hyped up, jacked up market, you know, and this is what we've got going on right now between Bitcoin and the Dow and real estate. I mean, real estate, folks, we've got the lower to middle end market pricing is insanity. Airbnb. I don't know if you know what this is. This is this where you can go rent houses from people in whatever city you're going to, or VRBO, vacation rentals by owner. So when you combine really low interest rates for years on mortgages in the low single digits and rental income, and when you get into commercial real estate, and in residential, you've got these equity groups, these large investment organizations that just have money that they want to put into something. and they want it to be secure and they want to get a return. Well, for years, the cap rate or ROI, the return on investment rate on real estate had to be a minimum, typically 12% is what everybody shot for. Now, all of a sudden, these companies are accepting 5s and 4%. Well, that's just insane, frankly, because, you know, they're not doing proper calculations of vacancy. I discussed that stuff recently. And it's just, it's basically when the investor is comfortable with a lower rate of return and interest rates are really low, it encourages real estate prices to go way up because, number one, the same amount of rental income that, you know, they would have wanted 10 or 12% on 3 years ago and they're willing to accept 4 or 5 now. And with low interest rates, they basically, you think of it as a you know, return on capital, time value of money. If you're an average individual and you say you had a mortgage against it, the lower payment allows you more, to either buy more house or have less of a payment for rental purposes. And I can just tell you, all these things is the perfect storm. When everybody, I was talking to a good friend of mine who is a major, major watch wholesaler down in Florida, which is, of course, you know, one of the money capitals, money locations of the U.S. He's very close to where Donald Trump's house is. And I said, how's your business? He said, it's okay. It's not great. But he said, you know, all these people in this industry are doing this Bitcoin stuff. They're going crazy for this Bitcoin. And he says, and all these guys with money, they're buying all that. He said, Kevin, they're overpaying for all this real estate that they think they can rent out on Airbnb. Folks, I've been through a lot of years of financial experience. I was in the lending aspect of things, especially the non-conforming side. And I can just tell you, I smell a bubble, a big old bad bubble. And when all this stuff that's going crazy like this comes together, it's just a matter of time. It makes no sense. It's not the real deal. Ironically, while Trump was running for office, you know, he said over and over, the stock market is a bubble and it's going to burst. Well, now it's bubbling a lot more and Trump's all behind it. My opinion is by Donald Trump attaching himself to the stock market and taking credit for its performance is setting himself up for a very bad day. What goes up must come down. I think you all agree with that. And he's not, you know, he's contributed. People feel better about it. The tax cut's going to help. All these things, but you get to the point where you can't wring any more water out of a rag, right? You get where you squeeze every iota out of the economy. And another good old family friend that goes way back who is a director of leveraged finance for Barclays Bank, you know, based out of London and New York, was telling me he's dealt with Donald Trump individually since the 80s. And he was telling me that once when Obama's in office, they get rates up before the Democrats come in and then they lower rates while a Democrat's in office to try to stimulate the economy because they know that the Democrats generally want to ruin the economy. When the Republican gets in and the economy does better, especially a Trump-style Republican, they raise interest rates. And if you haven't noticed, since Trump got in, the Fed's already done 3 rate increases and they've got more coming. And he called it loading the gun. So basically what he says is they raise the rate up and up and up. And then that way, when the next Democrat gets in, down it goes again. And so we're going back into that cycle now. And I don't know. I really don't really know what to say or think about all of it, folks. I just know that it smells fishy. And the other problem is when they tell us things are so good, you talk to the average individual and it ain't so good. You know, there's nothing new. And the tax cut's going to help get put supposedly more money back in people's pockets at the working level. But they're really not getting a pay raise. And so what's going on is, you know, when I graduated from college in 1990, basically, a good engineering position started out at around, you know, $34,000, $35,000 a year. Now that same position is $50,000, $55,000, right? And so it's gone up about 75, 80%. In the same amount of time, the dollar's lost two-thirds of its spending power. So effectively what happens is you have an 80% increase in wages and a two-thirds decrease in spending power. You're not keeping up. So if a dollar now takes $3 to buy the same thing, if what took a dollar in 1990 now takes three, well the person, you know, the $35,000 a year or $34,000 a year engineering wage of 1990 should be three times as much. It should be $100,000 today. And this doesn't just apply to that area. This applies to everywhere. I mean, minimum wage, you know, what people are making. Shockingly, surprisingly, minimum wage has done a better job of keeping up with inflation, with the tripling of inflation over the years, than the middle upper incomes. Real upper incomes have basically abolished themselves. The big money CEO positions are no longer like that as much as they were. But what I'm getting at in simplicity is that the average working man has not seen a reasonable pay increase in 27 years or whatever you want to call it, and not enough to keep up with inflation. So they are not able to live the way they could, you know, in the past. And so giving them a tax break gives them more disposable income, but it doesn't increase their actual wage. And the problem with that is later on when the Democrats come back in and they have to increase taxes, it's going to just strip that man back down to nothing, you know, and then they'll blame it on the Republicans. Folks, the liberal Democrats, in all honesty, truly are socialists. I mean, to such an extreme now where they have no qualms, no concerns, absolutely, you know, none about putting in all increasing taxes and levies and regulations and, you know, putting this garbage Russia collusion. This is getting so nauseating. Last week they were talking about Robert Mueller, who heads it up, and Jim, whatever, Rosenstein, and there's so much corruption. They're getting email or text from the heads of the FBI absolutely slamming Trump, you know, to the most vile extremes. Literally, you've got that Andy Weiss, you've got that Shuck, or something like that guy who's the director, and these people are writing things about essentially colluding against Trump to prevent him from winning first, and then to prevent him from doing his job. And there's so much collusion and so much corruption we're finding out about now, folks. I'll tell you another one that kind of spun my head around. Doesn't surprise me, but and I'm not sure if you ran into this today or heard about it, but Obama essentially propped up Hezbollah to such an extreme, supposedly. People say to get the Iran deal through. Folks, I don't even know how to methodically take this apart. But I'm telling you, it is a mess. And I'll kind of try to go over it. I've got some information here I want to pull up, but I'm not sure if there's some other information. Oh, one other thing, too. The Amtrak train that derailed in outside Seattle. That's kind of crazy, too. They got some new Amtrak. It was its first maiden voyage, if you will, and it blew off the tracks at like 80 miles an hour, 77 people injured out of 83, brand new service. Apparently it went off the tracks at 80 miles an hour on a 30 mile an hour curve is what they say. And it's pretty serious. Cut off I-5 in Seattle. And apparently it's a dandy. We'll just say that, you know, so, okay. So here, let's bounce through some of this stuff. I got all this news in front of me, but one that concerns me the most, it doesn't surprise me, but that it concerns me is this thing with Obama and Hezbollah. So, I mean, I don't even know where to begin on this. It's so unbelievable, okay? The Obama administration, and folks, I'm gonna back up a little bit on this again. I don't believe that it was just for the Iran deal. To a degree, yes. Because Obama's the worst negotiator on earth. He has no business sense at all. He's a radical ideologue. And folks, honestly, he left this country and this globe in shambles. I mean, frankly, we've got such a problem. Even the hatred and the vitriol towards Trump, all that originally stems from Obama's spirit and attitude towards everyone that didn't agree with him, and probably even those who did. Anyone who wasn't a black liberation theologist with Black Panther underlying or, you know, underpinnings was the enemy. So I don't believe that at all. I know that. I think if somebody could do some good research, and I do have, I think, some decent connections that are kind of a little bit in the deep state, but they're not on the bad side of it. But I do know, frankly, for a fact that the whole situation in Benghazi, where our ambassador was killed and nobody had any security, any protection, they were telling Navy SEALs and other people at just short distances away to stand down. Military men finally went in to protect these people against their commands. You know, just unbelievable. Well, the reason for that was the CIA was there. They weren't either supposed to be or didn't want anyone to know or didn't want them to know how many or didn't want them to know what they were doing. What they were doing, this was right after Obama and Hillary took down Gaddafi. And here's what spooks me. Folks, I believe in my depths of, you know, whatever, I believe that Obama is anti-American, and I believe he's very pro-ISIS, pro-jihad, very, very Islamic in nature. And so they took down Muammar Gaddafi, the leader of Libya forever, after we had deals with them, agreements. They allowed him to not only be assassinated, but to be tortured and beaten and mistreated in a sick way. They pumped it out on the TV. It's just sad for our nation of our nature. And I feel like, you know, all this liberal stuff, it's all this bullying. This is what their technique is. It's that snotty girl on the playground when you're five or when you're in fifth grade or when she's in fifth grade and you're in fourth and she's, you know, run around bossing everybody and bullying them, these are the kids that grow up to be the Hillary Clintons of the world, you know. And so they, I think, intentionally took down Muammar Gaddafi because he wasn't in their circle of the Muslim Brotherhood. They got the Muslim Brotherhood in control everywhere in Egypt and Iraq and Iran, and they wanted to. Obama was buying into this crazy lie, whatever the lie was, and it was global jihad. I think Obama felt most comfortable with being with the Muslim community, because on four separate occasions he, quote, accidentally referred to his Muslim faith. He defended it. He explained it. You know, and like I've always said, when's the last time you accidentally referred to your Muslim faith? He was talking to George Stephanopoulos on ABC or whatever they are. And he said, my Muslim faith. And George said, don't you mean your Christian faith, sir? And he said, you know what I mean, George. And he continued on. But like I said, people don't accidentally make that mistake. And so he was over there feeding. You can go all the way back to crystal clear evidence that Obama got $500 million donated to his campaign prior to his first election. $500 million from Hamas, from a solicitation center in Gaza, okay? So these Arabs were very excited about Obama getting in there. I suspect Obama went to see them somewhere and made them promises that no American president ever has, would, could, or should do. And from there, it spun. And that's why after the election, the singular first trip that Obama took was to bow before the king of Saudi Arabia. First trip, okay? Right before that, he took the bust of Winston Churchill out of the White House, okay? The bust of a man who impacted the globe in a positive fashion. Obama hates white people, and he does not like colonialism at all, which is sad because this whole Black Lives Matter thing frustrates me because, you know, injustices have been done, no questions about it, but there's nothing we can do about it now. We can only live our lives today in the best possible fashion. Social justice, folks, is important to understand. Social justice is trying to make entire groups of people pay for the mistakes and sins of individuals. It is exactly the same as racism. It's reverse racism. It's saying because you are born into this group, you automatically have this responsibility. You automatically have to pay for these sins, you know, because your founding fathers or your whatever, your forefathers did this and this and this to us or to society or whatever. They propagate what they claim to hate. They propagate exactly what they claim to be trying to stop. So the truth of the matter is they don't want this racial tension to go away. They're milking it. The system allows it, and it doesn't get to enough is enough. There's so much of this stuff going on with Antifa, you know, the anti-fascists, supposedly. That, you know, there's all these videos of them just violently attacking people. And, you know, the Black Lives Matter folks are doing the same thing. It's a way for a lot of criminals to vent their frustration and give them permission to go out and vandalize and assault people. I've seen some terrible things on videos that have been done in the name, you know, by the members of these communities. As soon as they do something bad that causes them harm, their actions and the person are renounced. They say they were never part of us. They're just fringe fanatics. And then, you know, recently there was a documentary that came out about a gal who was heading up Antifa, a few of them, who literally were specializing in training people in how to do serious damage all the way up to murder. So that's the whole circle realm. That's where the left's mind dwells, literally in the gutter. Okay? And so when you go back and you look, Hillary Clinton and Obama, neither of them had any business dealing with foreign affairs. They're literally corrupt. I think I mentioned that I was able to meet when I was in Tahiti, on a little private resort, I was able to meet the man, Salam Muhammad, whatever, who was the crown prince, who's now the king. And ironically, he asked Tahi, this other guy who was the director of this organization, he asked him, he says, do you know Hillary Clinton? Just because he has American roots, which is funny. Of course they don't. But that's that. And then it turned up later that that guy had bribed her for some stuff. And to them, it's not a bribe. It's just paying for business. You know, it's just, and it was pay for play. That's the real problem, is they deny it. So I keep getting bogged down in the marsh pit of that kind of stuff. So I'll try to move forward. So the whole history is Obama gets this incredible donation from Hamas and Hezbollah and, you know, the radical Arab Muslims during his first campaign. They fail to report it properly, and it shows up later, and they say, oops, sorry, it was a mistake, because they're on the left, and they get away with whatever they want because our government is inundated with these people. So then as you progress forward, we do Benghazi. We take down Libya. We allow Muammar Gaddafi to be slaughtered in the streets by supposed freedom fighter rebels or whatever. It's all the same group of people. They've got pictures of them playing both sides, and we're buying into it because there's a deeper root, and I'm not sure what that is. So we take out Muammar Gaddafi, and I think the specific reason was to get his weapons that we'd given him and transfer them to someone else. We know during the Benghazi event, we were transferring massive amounts of weapons to Syria. Well, what's Syria? Syria is where ISIS is headquartered. Syria is where ISIS has safe refuge. Syria has close ties with Iran. They are of the radical Muslim factions, the most radical, the jihadists, the hardcore jihadists. And by the way, folks, peace-loving Muslims that say they read the scriptures, not true. People who read the Quran and know it absolutely know what they are to do to Christians and Jews. And it is not pretty at all. One thing about Islam is there's no grace and mercy. We have grace and mercy. There's no grace, mercy, and love. It's harsh, it's strict, it's nasty, whatever. So anyway, they're doing the transfer of weapons. Obama's already gotten massive amounts of money from the king of Saudi Arabia. He's bowed before him, below his navel, which is complete submission. And then he goes as far as him and Hillary taking Muammar Gaddafi out, transferring weapons to Syria, which is going to ISIS. Okay. Now what comes out today, which is no big shocker, is that the Obama administration literally, you know, they use the term in news reports, backed off of investigating Hezbollah. But the truth is that they literally assisted, they aided and abetted this horrible organization. Hezbollah is not a nation. It is a gang. Hamas and Hezbollah, they don't own land. They are not a nation state. They are just a group of thugs that are out there creating havoc. They are radical Muslims. They hate Obama, Israel. They hate America. They just despise it, and they want to take it down. Obama had this need to be buddies with these guys, not knowing what he's doing. So Obama turned his back on Hezbollah as they were trafficking incredible amounts of drugs into the United States. And whenever anything was sent to the Department of Justice, they received major obstructionism there as well. Nothing would be prosecuted or pursued. Okay. Now, this is Hezbollah, probably one of the most dangerous terrorist organizations in the world, right up there. You know, many members of Hezbollah are in ISIS, etc. So essentially, what we've got is the Obama administration, the entire time, was protecting Hezbollah. It allowed drugs to come to the U.S. and they had what was called Project Cassandra, which was a U.S. Crime-fighting bill or whatever you call it, a crime-fighting operation, Project Cassandra. And when, as they tried to pursue stuff against Hezbollah, they saw delays. They had things hindered and obstructed, and they had a lot of their requests for prosecution rejected. They came up with $480 million in money laundered that, you know, the U.S. Department of Justice just blew off and ignored. So they fed this beast. Why? Well, they're saying, oh, it was so that he didn't mess up the Iran deal. Now, what's the Iran deal? It's this nuclear mess, this garbage where he supposedly wanted to sign this arms treaty thing where he supposedly, you know, contained and Iran and protected us from them. No way. I mean, there's money flying all over the place in this stuff. This is the one where he supposedly got four hostages released and, you know, there's video of about $400 million in cash on pallets being delivered to Iran at night, right before the hostages are released. And of course, the Obama administration says the two have nothing in common, even though they just finished signing this supposed nuclear treaty and got the, you know, hostages released and that cash is going in right there. You talk about the worst negotiator on earth. The United States of America has power, right? And for us to act like we, you know, don't, and to act like we've got to pay people off to such an extreme is so ridiculous. For us to make all of the compromises and all of the concessions. And I don't know why his mentality is this way, folks, but it's bad. This stuff's serious, right? When you've got, you know, the Obama administration railroading U.S. efforts to dismantle Hezbollah drug trafficking, which, you know, since it conflicted with aspirations to strike in there, and the Obama administration, they say it was to avoid conflicts with his aspiration to strike a nuclear deal with Iran, according to Politico. And, you know, when you get into what happened, you got the drug, the DEA's top secret effort to trace the trafficking found links to state sponsors in Iran. And then it says here, request that the DEA's team put in at the Department of State, Justice, and Treasury to advance the investigation were delayed or denied. Officials have said publicly they believed roadblocks were constructed for political reasons, namely to keep conversations about a nuclear deal with Iran going. Now, who is playing who? This is the magic question. You know, over the years I've had, I say this fair often, but I believe it's true. I believe I've had a fair amount of business exposure. Not just as a business owner, but in all kinds of facets. And I tend to become friends with people I do business with. It's just my nature. I love friends. I love people. I'm a friendly guy. And there are people who will befriend me, I've found in business, that I think, oh, what a nice guy. And then sometimes I find out later that they, you know, they feigned friendship to try to gain more, especially trust, to get in the circle of trust. And people typically tend to have circles of trust. A lot of times, you know, the tight inner circle is family, and the next circle out is the closest of friends, and et cetera. And friends get in the circle of trust. So what happens is these people basically, I think that Obama thought that he was, you know, avoiding these problems or avoiding prosecution to try to help with his top secret Iran nuclear deal. But the truth is that Hezbollah was watching him and laughing and saying, you know, we're the ones that are really ultimately in control. and they are correct. So it says here that during the negotiations, it says early on, the Iranians said, listen, we need you to lay off of Hezbollah. In other words, they requested reprieve from pursuing them. So, get down here. And it says, to tamp down the pressure on them. And the Obama administration acquiesced to that request. It was a strategic decision to show good faith toward the Iranians in terms of reaching an agreement, a former CIA officer told Politico. Basically, to turn a blind eye to severe criminal activity, murders, drug laundering, money laundering, you know, all kinds of illegal immigration and terrorism. I mean, he turned a blind eye to terrorism. They say that their efforts to pursue Hezbollah in the area of terrorism found some of the largest roadblocks imaginable. These people that were running our country for a while, folks, were literally out of control. And if you think about the Benghazi event, that took place right before this Obama's reelection campaign, and he literally turned a blind eye, walked away, let people get slaughtered because he didn't want to mar his campaign. And he's so used to lying and sweeping things under the rug, and I've dealt with that with people before. I had an employee who was a good friend I really enjoyed for years and years and years, but that's just what he would do, is he would lie and hide and lie and hide and lie and hide. And he's one that I think used friendship to his advantage. And this kind of stuff is, you know, we've all experienced this stuff in life, but Obama's mind is twisted. I mean, I remember so well when I was in college, and I've always been a debater, and I've always been engaged in debates, and dealing with these liberals and their mindset is just, I don't know what comes first, the chicken or the egg. Are the people born thinking this way? Are they taught to think this way? You know, but the level of destruction, they just don't understand the brevity of it, the severity of it, of what this stuff's going on. It also says that the Hezbollah-related investigations were, it says, tamped down. And this is in a, you know, I'm reading a liberal news source here, which is dangerous. It says, for fear of rocking the boat with Iran and jeopardizing the nuclear deal, a Treasury official in the Office of Terrorist Financing told the House Committee on Foreign Affairs last February. Within months of Obama's announcement of the successful forged Iran nuclear deal, some of the most senior officials on the project, including the DEA agent who supervised it, were transferred to other assignments. So they were the inconvenient ones were transferred. The most senior officials, literally, there was a lot of movement of people, either some to pay favors, others to, to get revenge, others to just to get rid of because they're inconvenient, things like that. We'll just leave it at that. That is very serious, serious stuff, in my opinion. we know that the Project Cassandra, which detected things were this bad, they saw every kind of delay and obstruction possible. The Obama administration allowed terrorism to grow in order to curry favor from Iran. That, to me, folks, is enough said for sure. And so there you have it. No, I know Obama's gone, and I've had people say that. Why do you talk about that? Well, I talk about 9/11, and it's way gone in the past, but I'll tell you what, it makes a big effect on things. It's had a huge effect on things, 9/11. It's created the world we live in today. We've got terrorism running rampant. We've got terrorists all over our country. We've got Muslims everywhere. Jefferson warned us. He warned a future president, don't become rusty on history, basically. He said, you need to know history so you don't open the doors with welcoming arms to these people. They will destroy us. And guess what, folks? We're there. We've got the fatwa where they want to overpopulate. And, I mean, we're facing some crazy times. And they're just not going to change. I think we all agree. We can all agree on that. For better or worse, it's not exactly the most, you know, pleasant perception, I guess, of things, you know, that we face. So what else do we got to do here? I've got other stuff. I mean, I've got so many different things I always get ready. One thing I ran into here that I think is kind of neat, and I could never possibly cover them all, is the names of God. My Lord, this is cool. You know, God is incredible. I mean, he's everything, everywhere. He's the good, the bad, everything in between. He comes the first time as a suffering servant to bring peace on earth and spread the good news, which is what Christmas is supposed to be about. And then we have Jesus coming back as a conquering king. He's going to come back as the ultimate warrior to control the earth or to, you know, get it back under control. These things are really cool. I mean, but you start to look at the names of God, and I've got so many here, I could never deal with them, but you got Abba, Father, Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. He calls himself Atikwa Yom, the Ancient of Days, the Anointed One, the God who gave you birth. This God, the God of the Bible, is the reason you were born. Folks, life is a blessing. You have to enjoy your life. You've got to enjoy it. You've got to do the best you can with it. Do not settle for second best. Do not settle for mediocrity. And I realize everyone is given a different set of talents. There's no doubt. Some of you, if it comes to speaking, you become so tongue-tied, you don't even know what happened. Others can speak like crazy. Some people under pressure speak better. Other people freeze up, which makes conflict interesting. Some people are very mechanical in nature. Some people are very analytical in nature. I mean, that's just a lightly scratching the surface. We're all so variously different. But what's important is he gave you birth. Your existence today, listening to this show, is because you were given birth, a great gift. There is something about life. We don't know what drives it. We don't know why it's there. There's a lot of things. You know, I love modern day scientists that say we're so much smarter than we used to be because we believe in science, because we know how things work. Well, factually, you know, I agree, for years people got supernatural about things and superstitious, and that's what they're talking about when they try to brag, essentially, that, you know, that science has solved all these questions. Well, when you go back far enough, they never thought that way. A lot of that belief was central around the Dark Ages, when people, you know, thought everything was a spiritual attack or whatever. But we don't really know what causes things or why. All we know, all we do now is observe. Science is the art of observation. It is not the art of control. I mean, you can control and manipulate stuff to a degree, but there's certain things that we could never duplicate and never would be able to. You think of just the cell. You think of the rejuvenative properties of the human body and how it can just regenerate itself with injury and that sort of thing. And time definitely flies as you get older, like I have, and you just start to realize that gravity is winning. So some other names of God: the God of knowledge, the God Most High, you know, the everlasting God. These are, you know, I'm not reading the Hebrew. They have like El Olam and El Elyon and El Dea, El Roy, the God who sees, God Almighty, El Shaddai, Elohim, the Creator, Yahweh, we have all heard that one. How about the self-existent one? That's philosophically interesting. He's self-existent. I am, because I am. There's Yahweh Bor, the Lord Creator. There's Yahweh Nisi, the Lord my banner. There's Yahweh Ra, the Lord my shepherd. Yahweh Rapha, the Lord that heals. Yahweh Shalom, the Lord of peace. And then there's Yahweh Shema, the Lord is there. Yahweh Sabaoth, the Lord of hosts. And I can keep going. It's they got the Lord of righteousness. The Lord will provide. And like I said, it, you know, there's an, this goes on and on and on and on. So the holographic depth of our God is phenomenal. He is in, he is everywhere in all things. He is all things. I'm not talking Star Wars, the force of Buddhism. I'm talking the one true God. And I guess from that, the only statement I would make to encourage you is try with all of your might not to put your God in a box. Folks, if you even took the time to comprehend what limitations you put on God when you pray, it's pathetic, okay? Because God has it all. He owns it all. He does it all. He's magnificent. He does, you know, he's got the power to do it all. Let him say yes or no, okay? I think I've told the story of a friend who had a business that struggled a lot, but he liked to make people feel sorry for him, which is not an area that I could ever comprehend. And we, you know, he had financial struggles. I encouraged him and convinced him at one point to pray for his business. We prayed for it. He prayed for it. He started to do very well. In about a month, I talked to him. How's it going? He had his best week ever. And then another month later, I talked to him. How's it going? Really bad. I said, are you still praying? And he went back to his first objection, which he said, I don't feel comfortable praying about money. And folks, if you don't feel comfortable praying about money, you have a completely inappropriate response or relationship with God. Money is the reflection of your heart's condition. Like it or not, money makes the world go round. Solomon said, money is the answer to everything. Whether you like it or not, it just is the way it is. I mean, whether you choose to live without money, you're still letting money control you. Money is an outward reflection of your heart condition. It's a tangible reflection. God says that man looks on the outward appearance. God looks at the heart. With our handling of money, it says a lot about what we do. We can get into dumb hobbies and habits where we buy things that are too expensive or that we waste. I remember a customer coming in for quite a while who, you know, was owned an oil company that he sold. And he was talking about drinking $1,500 bottles of wine. He was a very advanced wine connoisseur. And I just could never comprehend that they would get together with a group of people. And he said they literally, on a large group, go through like 8 bottles of wine that were $1,200 to $1,500 a bottle for special occasions. Those are the kinds of things. You know, Proverbs says anyone who loves oil and wine will never be rich. And oil back in the time of Christ was a very expensive commodity. But we do have complete accountability, and especially with our money. If you're doing foolish things with your money, you've got to pray about it. There's a special occasion for everything, and there's a time and a place that you can really enjoy yourself. But in general, we have to appreciate the life God gave us, and we've got to really work our hardest to just repay him, to show our gratitude and enjoy it, even when things are tough. it's still such a blessing to exist on this planet. I don't understand it. I don't know where, you know, where it all comes from or where it all goes. In Ecclesiastes, he talks a lot about the spirit and, you know, that it, you know, it goes back to God or whatnot. This weekend, I was doing some study on King Solomon, and very, very interesting on how he gained his wisdom. I just thought was real interesting because I believe that part of the reason Solomon gained such wisdom was that God favored Solomon's father so much that he wanted it to be a final blessing to David to have the most incredible son in the history of the planet before or since, which is true, but at the same time, all the goodies of life sent Solomon off the rails, and he ended up not doing so hot. So, you know, but you look at the power of Solomon. 1 Kings 3, it says, first of all, it starts out and says, Solomon formed a marriage alliance with Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Okay, wow. I mean, the most, wouldn't you agree that at that time, Egypt was the most powerful nation on earth. They thought their pharaohs were deities. Solomon was marrying Pharaoh's daughter. Pretty impressive. It says he took Pharaoh's daughter and brought her to the city of David until he had finished building his own house and the house of the Lord and the wall around Jerusalem. So Solomon made Jerusalem great. God blessed his socks off. There was a scripture where you've probably read it where God gave Solomon the option to have anything he wanted. And Solomon said, I want wisdom because I want to be able to help the people. And God essentially said, well, because you've asked for wisdom to help the people and not for riches and not for the hands of your or the heads of your enemies, basically, and not for the same stuff I hear all the time, I'm going to give you that. And in addition, I'm going to give you all those other things. I'm going to give you more than any man before you or any man after you will ever have. And we do have a written record in the Bible of the amount of gold and silver and stones that Solomon had. By today's standards, is over $1 trillion. Well, today there are no trillionaires on earth that we know of. And Solomon, by today's standards, with inflation adjustments, if you want, or repricing based on current market standards, he would have been a trillionaire. So he left. So God left him a pretty impressive legacy behind. So then it says he took the Pharaoh's daughter, built Jerusalem up, the wall and everything. The people were still sacrificing in the high places because there was no house built, and it goes on. And I like this because let me get down here. Yeah, everyone knows about the wisdom of splitting the baby, where, you know, there was two women living together. They both had had babies at about the same time, and they were apparently in the same room or something. And one of the women actually at night slept on her baby and suffocated and killed it. In the middle of the night, she got up and went and switched her dead baby with a live baby from another woman, from the other woman. The other woman woke up, saw the baby was dead, knew it wasn't her baby, and the debate began. Ultimately, they went to Solomon's court, and they both claimed it was their child. And so Solomon said, bring me a sword. I'm going to cut that baby in half and you each get half. Well, one woman said, yeah, or she said, neither of us deserve the child. The other woman screamed and said, no, let her have the baby. Well, instantly, the real mother is the one that says, no, save the baby. I'll give up the baby just to save its life. And Solomon knew immediately who the mother was. Well, it went through the kingdom. You know, that was one of his first really cool acts of justice. People used to come from all around to hear him. the Queen of Sheba actually gave him the equivalent of 666 talents of gold. A talent of gold, a talent was about what a man made in his lifetime. So, you know, I mean, if you think you make $1 million in all your earnings in your lifetime or whatever, that's about how much gold times 666 plus other stuff she gave him just because he was so blessed and successful. So he was very respected. I did some research on him, or I guess read a lot about him this weekend. And it's just, there's so much amazing stuff in our Bible. And I really love it. And God's just done such incredible things for us as believers. So anyway, as usual, we're running short on time. We've got a couple, let's see what else. The Pope, how about this for ending the show? The Pope said that fake news is a sin. Hallelujah, right? Like, you know, the Pope, whatever. But the point is, it's a lie. It's fake news. It's a lie. And we... You know, the communist Marxists recommended using propaganda, and we've perfected in this nation. So there you go. We'll end on that. Folks, I always throw the quick plug. You got questions. You want to know about finances, investing. It's a great time to buy. The market's tamped down, if you will. The dirt's packed down. The values are great. We're very good at what we do. We have a nice selection right now of stuff from estates. A lot of silver dollars and good gold coins that are very, very wholesale. I do highly recommend this as an opportune time to get yourself in. When it runs hard, and there's really no looking back at that point. So please give us a call, and 444-0044, toll free 877-TAP-COIN, or through the website at coinsplus.com. Let us help you out. We do 401ks, IRAs, etc. But let it, you know, do the right thing. Time is great. Take care. God bless. Thanks again, and we'll be back Wednesday. Bye-bye.